Welcome to the Next Level Occupational Therapy Podcast. My name is Kara Welke, occupational therapist and creator of the Next Level Occupational Therapy Platform. The goal of this podcast is to encourage, inspire, and motivate occupational therapy professionals to level up in their career, whether that be to start a new business, add a side job, and or to figure out how to be more satisfied in their current career. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the Next Level Occupational Therapy Podcast. My name is Kara Welke, occupational therapist and creator of the Next Level Occupational Therapy Platform. The goal of this podcast is to encourage, inspire, and motivate occupational therapy professionals to level up in their career, whether that be to start a new business, add a side job, and or to figure out how to be more satisfied in their current career. Thank you for listening to today's show, which is sponsored by our flagship program, our Therapy Business Builder program, where we help healthcare professionals start their business of their dreams from the ground up. Also, be sure to join our free Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook group. And for even more support, guidance, and training, check out our Next Level Visionary Membership group. Time to level up, occupational therapy professional. So my goal with this podcast is to interview as many occupational therapy professionals as possible who have started their own business so that you can learn from those that have already been through the process. On today's show, it's my pleasure to interview Sue Doyle. Sue Doyle has been an occupational therapist for more than 38 years. She was trained in Australia as an occupational therapist and opened her first private practice specializing in both pediatrics and adult rehab in the early 1980s. Her experience is across a broad area of occupational therapy practice and includes more than 11 years in academia, teaching both adult and pediatric treatment courses, neuroscience, and research. Sue has written several chapters in occupational therapy textbooks, presented at multiple conferences, including as part of AOTA's stroke specialty conference team, and has multiple international peer review publications, which we were just talking about that she has a recent one that was just published this month in AJOT. So we can talk about that more later. Her research areas have included evidence-based practice, therapist decision-making and clinical reasoning, and sensory impairments after stroke. She also was involved in establishment and management of free clinics for students at two universities. Sue believes in giving back to her local community and has been involved in many ways to improve the health and wellness of others. Since 2009, she has been involved with Battleground Healthcare, a free comprehensive medical clinic that provides medical, dental, rehabilitation, and vision services to those who are uninsured and underinsured in the Southwest Washington region. She has also served in various positions as founding board member, rehabilitation services coordinator, chronic pain program coordinator, grant writer, and director of operations for the free clinic. Sue was also involved in running free clinics for the students at the university, which provided opportunities for student learning, and also providing practical demonstrations on how to give back to the community. Over the last year, Sue has worked on developing her private practice, serving adults in their home and in her clinic, which she started in 2016. Her practice includes stroke survivors, aging in place, and home safety, and she contracts with the Developmental Disability Administration and Area Agency on Aging. Plus, she just started teaching one of our brand new programs, which is Home Safety and Modification Business Builder Program, which has been getting rave reviews because, of course, Sue's knowledge is amazing. When she's not working, which I just asked her how she does it all, she enjoys spending time with her family, including her two grandchildren, hiking and being outdoors, cooking and gardening, and Sue and her husband are currently building their new barrier-free accessible home in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. Welcome, Sue. Pretty amazing, everything that you have done. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. Yes, but a lot of that's because I've had good support and teams, and I'm just super excited about our home modification program with the team that we have together. That really makes it work.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's start first with your current business. Can you tell us about your current business and everything that you're doing with that? And then as we get going, I want you to share more about, you know, the course and some of the other things that you have done. But let's focus on your current business right now.
So I was working in academia, but it was a 3-hour commute. And so I had a condo up there in the Seattle area and was commuting back and forth. And I did not want to move from here. My family was here. And academia is an interesting environment, as you well know. So I was trying to look at other things. I thought, well, I'll just start my own business when I left. And we had no debt, so we were able to do that. My husband is medically retired, disabled. And so, you know, I was like, oh, that will give me more time. I've learned a lot of things along the way about that. But as I thought about doing that, I started seeing a couple of clients, and then I was talking to the chiropractor next door, and she's like, you know, you have to bill Medicare, right? And so I learned all of these things on the way about having to bill Medicare, then how to get registered and do that. In the meantime, there were issues at the free clinic that you talked about me being involved in. And so I kind of got waylaid a little bit there with, they now took over a lot of my available time. And that's when I became the director of operations, did a lot of grant writing and did a lot of development of the program there. So I still kind of did my business a little bit along the way because working at the free clinic was kind of volunteer. And so a year and a half ago, I was like, oh, if we're going to build this house, I need to make this business work. And so about a year and a half ago, I really started putting in the effort. One of the things the free clinic had done for me as I was director of operations had really given me a lot of contacts in the community here that I did not have before. And so that was really helpful. And I started being able to go to some networking meetings and interact in the community in a different way with my business. And so really being able to build it up in that way. And then the contacts started were case managers. And I went to a meeting with some people for senior networking. And while I was there, there were a couple of case managers from Developmental Disabilities Administration that were asking me questions. And we were just talking. And before I had even left the meeting, I got an email from their director in Olympia, a several hours drive away, saying, we need you to contract with us. And so just being building those contracts, working with Area Agency on Aging, and then with each of the doctors in the case managers. So that's how I've been able to kind of build my business. And then I moved my office from the little regional little town I was in into the bigger town as well. I do have an office. I do mobile Part B, but I do see some clients in my office as well. But since we're building, I don't have an office at home either. So that's kind of been my space. And it's kind of improved, and I've been getting busier and busier. So now I'm seeing 4 to 6 clients every day. And I started to learn that I need to take Fridays off just from seeing patients to try and keep up with the paperwork and booking appointments and screening and some of the business building kind of strategies. So that's where I'm at with that right now.
Can you tell us about like your caseload? Like what are some types of clients you see and what are some of the different types of treatments or things you focus on?
Yeah, so interestingly, I'm finding the case managers are sending me clients they don't know what to do with. And I'm getting feedback from the case managers, you're really helping me solve this problem. And so from the Developmental Disabilities Administration contracts, I'm getting a lot of referrals for home modifications assessments. but also for problem solving. These clients are having behavior issues. The caregivers are having issues. We don't know what to do about this bathing situation. We've had home health come in and they've not done anything to resolve it. Or home health has just left saying they can't fix the problem. And so a lot of coming in and doing a home safety assessment, recommending modifications, everything from adding ramps, removing wall barriers, modifying bathrooms to roll-in showers, or looking at lifts and those kinds of options, to caregiver training. So all of those pieces fit into that, from developmental disabilities. From Area Agency on Aging, I also have a contract with them, but I bill Medicare, Medicaid for each of these services as well, which was kind of my big foot in the door, was being credentialed with Medicare and Medicaid, was then something that gave Amy credibility to the case managers, but helped resolve some of their funding issues and some of the things related to that. I do get funding outside of Medicare and Medicaid for some of the design stuff, some of the equipment search, or sometimes where the services they want me to do aren't as justifiable medically and are not able to be billed as easily on insurance. Interestingly, a couple of the other, when we talk about Developmental Disabilities Administration, a lot of the referrals I'm getting right now, the clients are anywhere from 20 to 70, and they're having family members or parents that are taking care of them. So you can imagine if that's where the child's age is, where the parent's age is, and that's where some of the problems are coming up in terms of, I'm encountering a lot of 60-year-old mothers that are totally lifting their 30, 40-year-old child, lifting them out of the bed to carry them to a chair, lifting them out of the bed to put them in the bath, lifting them out of the bath and back out again. And so, of course, that often at this age is suddenly not sustainable anymore.
And that's kind of a good point I'd like to talk about, because sometimes, and I don't know if this is true, but this is just my feeling, when people think of home safety and modification, I feel they automatically think of older adults and kind of forget maybe the possibility of the people with developmental disabilities or even pediatrics, where a pediatric, like one of my friends, one of our family friends' son was in an accident and had a spinal cord injury. And, you know, they lived in a house that was multiple stories. It was like a historic home, you know, and they definitely needed an occupational therapy to do home safety and modification. So it's nice to see that you do the whole range of age range. It's not just focused on older adults.
Yeah, I've also got a couple of interesting referrals from Developmental Disabilities Administration for younger clients who have autism, who are becoming violent. And so looking at how can we modify the home to make it safer for not only the client, but the family members as well. So that was an interesting learning experience for those couple of clients. But that's consistent with some of what you're seeing in that area. The age range, I think my clients for home safety, home modifications, DME recommendations have been anything from 5 and up. So that's kind of a big range when you start to think about what does that look like, and you're starting to design play and toy spaces. As well as, you know, seniors and trying to do that. I've also found that I've got some workers' compensation cases, and I've just done the CHAMPS workers' compensation home modification training with the David Corey company. So I'm working now on marketing towards that. And in the office building in which I'm in, right beside me, I have a personal injury attorney on one side and one of the largest workers' compensation attorneys on the other side. So they're all, you know, we would have done this if it wasn't for the COVID environment, but they're all talking about us meeting together and having lunch and discussing that. And so there's opportunities in that area aside from where I'm working with seniors. I'm getting some referrals with the seniors from case management for Area Agency on Aging, but those have tended to be seniors that they need, again, home modifications, they need a specialized input on that, or seniors where, again, the case managers are not sure what to do. And so one that I got in the COVID environment just recently was one the case manager called me and said, here's what's happening. I'm doing this specialized program for Area Agency on Aging that works at clients that are high risk and that are coming in and out of the hospital. This client has been in and out of the hospital every couple of weeks. Every time we send out home health says she's not safe and they're not willing to go in. Can you go in and help me? Because I can't get any of the modifications done or support her without the therapist assessment. And she called me the other day and she's like, you're doing such a great job. I've got two other clients I want you to see. So those are the things that are really giving me more cases and that feedback from those complicated cases and problem solving. And being honest with the case managers up front, it's like, you know, here's the skill set I have. I do have this, but I'm going to have to learn about this piece too. So, you know, let's work together as a team to look at how we can problem solve that.
I love the network you have. I mean, from the people in your office to all the different programs and networks, I mean, that's huge. Do you feel most of your business is focused home safety and mods, or do you do more general OT in-home med B type stuff too?
So I think it's a 50-50 mix. And the other thing is what I'm finding when I'm going out to do the home safety assessments, I'm identifying clients that haven't ever had therapy often, or clients that are in wheelchairs that they purchased from a vendor who was coming around the retirement village and they don't fit and have never been adjusted. And I'm sitting here going, this client has been seen by three other therapists since they've had their stroke, and nobody has ever addressed the fact that this is the wrong size chair for them. So I've started doing more and more wheelchair assessments. And as I've been doing that, I'm actually finding now that the wheelchair ATP and companies are calling me because I can come to the home and do the assessment in the home. And with that, then I'm also then identifying there's weakness issues, there's caregiver training issues, there's dementia issues, there's all of these other scopes and roles for occupational therapy that's there. So sometimes it tends to feel like it's very broad, but all of my OT skills are coming into play when I do that. And running my own company means that I can address those, you know. Initially, I didn't ever turn down referrals. I've started to lately turn down referrals, but they're in areas that are ones where I've had experience before, because being an OT now for 40 years, I've worked in pretty much every area. And when I came to the US, I worked as a traveler for 18 months. So, you know, got a lot of exposure. But I've started to turn down the hand therapy, some of the shoulders and those. It's not that I can't do it. It's just that I'm not in that area consistently. I don't have a lot of the equipment. And I feel like there are some great hand therapists here. So for me, I need to just focus on the things that I can do well and that are different kind of service.
Well, and that works well both ways, because you can refer to those therapists for what they do best and they can refer to you for what you do best. So
yeah. And that's what I'm starting to find as well. I'm starting to get some referrals from some of the local PT practices as well. This person needs you to go out and do a home modification assessment. This person needs you to. I got a phone call the other day from the wife of a gentleman here. They are business people. He has a neurodegenerative disorder. And she said three different people recommended me to you, you know, me to seek you out because this is what's happening at home. And so when I kind of tried to suss out who those people were, It was the PT that she'd been seeing in private practice. It was the ATP that they were seeing for the wheelchair. And it was some other community agency or support system that she had done. So getting that reputation, which is really come in the last 18 months of pushing, of being out there, of just being upfront and honest about what we can do, and reaching out and working as a team with the case managers and the ATPs has really worked, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's what we preach in all of our different programs. You have to get out there. You have to make connections. You have to show why people should trust you and want to send clients to you. And to have someone say you were recommended by three different people, that's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about payment, because I know that's a hot topic for home safety and modifications, because there's a lot of people that do private pay for home safety and modifications. But recently AOTA in January came out with an article, and you did a presentation on home safety and modifications at AOTA a few years ago about Med B. And I think everyone probably now knows that I'm a huge Med B proponent if the services you're providing are skilled and medically necessary. So can you talk a little bit about that? Like, do you do any private pay stuff, or, and how does that all work with the home safety mod?
I think I might have been partially responsible for the AOTA article, because I think I stirred a hornet's nest when I made my presentation. So I think I want to go back just a little bit in terms of falls are a big high cost area for Medicare. So is moving clients into an assisted living or into some kind of supported living situation that's not at home. And as they've recognized that, there's also a lot of data that has come out about the efficacy of occupational therapy in that respect. And so when you look at falls and you look at the study program and you look at what CDC, which the study program is part of CDC recommendations, it has been for having an OT do a home safety evaluation. And it specifically states an occupational therapist doing that assessment. So as Medicare looked at making their guidelines and their recommendations, one of them was very clearly that seniors over the age of 65 should be asked annually by their physician about their fall history, their near fall risk, and any injuries that have occurred from those falls. And it really was because Medicare identified this as a concern. And in so doing so, they also wanted to encourage best practice. And so then they brought out the MIPS program, which was the Merit-Based Incentive Payment Service, so that if the physicians followed these best practice guidelines, their reimbursement from Medicare increased. So again, MIPS 154 and 155 are related to falls and fall safety. And not only do they have to ask the question, but then they have to take action to receive the payment. And one of those actions is referring to an OT. So it's very clear that in this environment, Medicare considers occupational therapy, home safety, home assessments as a medically necessary part for clients who are at risk for falls or who have demonstrated a history of falls. So having said that, it's then, when do you know is this medically necessary or not? And that's part of what we talk about in our course. AOTA has tried to put out some guidelines. Again, it comes back to the therapist's clinical decision-making and clinical reasoning for each case. It really is unique. But where there is this history, or there's a medical referral based on that, or where there's a diagnosis that's really impacting the client factors leading to those falls, then we really clearly have a case that this is covered under Medicare Part B. If that's the situation, we can't provide those services and make those recommendations as an occupational therapist and privately charge the client. We have to bill under Medicare. And I think that was a big realization for me when I started my practice, just as it was like for you. And for me in that situation, it wasn't, I hadn't learned so much about MIPS and the recommendations as much as I was trying to treat a client recovering from stroke. And so it was a big learning experience with that. Having said that, being able to bill Medicare and being able to offer that as a credentialed Medicare service gives me also some credibility with the case managers, a way in which they can look at using the client's benefits to their best interest as well, and then being able to get some of the recommendations covered under some of the Medicare, Medicaid alternative or waiver programs. And so that's one of the biggest things that also comes out when you're working with seniors is how do you fund these recommendations, particularly for lower income seniors? And I think I tend to, at this stage, work a lot in that market, I guess coming from where my involvement has been with the free clinic with people who can't afford services or who don't have insurance, to moving into the Medicare, Medicaid market as well. So that tends to have been how I got into that piece. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, no, you did. And I just think we continue to need to get the word out there, because when I started my practice, like you mentioned, you know, I was seeing all of these people providing services that are cash-based because they don't want to deal with insurance and they don't want to, you know, they just want to charge a client, private pay, and that be it. But then as I started learning more, I realized, well, that's not the case. If the client is on Medicare and the services you are providing are skilled and medically necessary, which is the majority of my practice. And excuse me. And then just getting into more of this home mod stuff and learning more about it and, you know, talking with you and the article that came out, I just see, you know, so many people that are doing home mods that are charging privately when some of those services should probably be billed to Medicare, which is why, you know, we created that course that you are primarily leading to help people learn how to create a home safety and modification program. But one more question though, and then we'll go into that. But do you do some private pay clients still?
Yes, I do. And so those private pay clients have come because they don't fit the Medicare criteria, or they're not got Medicare as an insurance. And so, for example, I have clients where the wife is in a skilled nursing facility about to be discharged in a few weeks. There's modifications that need to be made at home. The therapists from the skilled nursing facility don't have the skills and also don't have the time to be able to come out, you know, to do that. Because the client is receiving Part A services, you can't bill for Part B. And so, and under that stage, you know, I do an ABN and go ahead and go out with the spouse and go through the home based on what they're telling me about the client's ability. And so that's one situation. First of all, the client's not there. And secondly, they're receiving Part A services. In that situation with that home, even if the client could have been there, there is no way I could have got the client past the front drive. just because of how the home was set up, there is no possible way. I could not have lifted or pushed that wheelchair up those 14 stairs by myself anyway. It's not the first time I bumped a patient up 5 to 6 stairs to do a home assessment. 14 with the weight of that client, there's no possible way. Also, I have people that are wanting to do some preventative. They've encountered a problem, they've recovered from that problem, but they're looking ahead and going, we're anticipating there's going to be these future problems. Can you help us work out what would be a different approach or things that we can do in the home? Of course, in both of these situations, these are very different from clients who are dependent on the Medicaid option with the dual coverage. These are clients who are a little more affluent that have some of the ability to pay. And then I'm likely working with the contractor directly on what those modifications would look like.
Awesome. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And that's one, when you were talking about trying to figure out, you know, if they're private pay Medicare, that's one of the things that you've been creating is a decision tree to help new therapists kind of figure out how to manage that.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the AOTA article was useful from that perspective. They spent 6 months with an attorney trying to put that together. It's like, okay, that matches exactly what I had talked about, which was reassuring to me that, you know, I had not been preaching some false gospel here. It was really what was in the Medicare guidelines. And so it's not always going to be Medicare eligible. And it, you know, your clinical judgment has to come in there, and then you have to be able to demonstrate that medical necessary part of it. But a lot of times it is going to be medically necessary. One of the things I find in this market is that we're not always doing really major modifications as well. So this is not that we're going to tear apart and put an addition on the house. This is we're going to look at some minor bathroom stuff or some door widening or ramps. I worked with another nonprofit last year for 6 months. We did a 6 month demonstration project. And this was a nonprofit that provides in-home care to clients in the Medicaid eligible, so Medicare, Medicaid eligible seniors who need in-home care. And they had been getting a lot of requests from their caregivers about seniors who are having difficulty with being able to get yard maintenance done or repairs in their home or modifications that they thought were needed for safety. And so we put together this program. We were able to get a grant to do the trial of it. And in the 6 month trial, we were able to demonstrate that we were able to make a big difference in, I think at that stage, it was 16 or 20 homes. In everything from they got Boy Scouts in or Army, the reserves in the high schools, they got them in and had them clear the yards with blackberries and everything else and all of those kinds of things that were creating problems for access and safety. But we developed protocols where anything that involved access into the home or in the bathrooms and stuff that the occupational therapist, I came in, I did them at this stage free because it was a demonstration program. But what we were able to conclude is that A, my recommendations were really worthwhile. Working with the team and the contractor that was doing it, it really was helpful to see my perspective of the long term and also some of the cost-effective ways to make those modifications. But the other piece we were able to demonstrate is that for most of those clients, those assessments would have been covered under their Medicare, Medicaid insurances. And so that was actually really helpful for sustainability of the program. So when we did their big fundraising night for that nonprofit, they featured our program. And we raised over $50,000 for the next year. But what we were able to say for those OT assessments that outlined and looked at what was needed, they didn't need to fundraise for that, for these clients as a whole had Medicare or Medicaid that would have covered those assessments.
Awesome. So where is that program at right now, or what's going on with it, or?
At COVID.
Of course, yeah.
It's only just in the last few weeks that we have been able to start to talk about contractors in our community being able to come back into the homes. Okay. So we're just looking at revamping that now, but there's been a bit of a backlog as well. So that's where we're working on. Where are we going?
And is that something that they hope to be able to expand to other parts of the state or country and so forth? I mean, that sounds like a really well worth program to have.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was started by two realtors here working with this nonprofit caregiving agency. And so the committee that did the demonstration program was these two realtors. One was a retired vet and another younger realtor starting out. His wife was a police officer, so the police officers union were helping at some stage with that. And also then this nonprofit agency, so their directors and one of their board members, they really had a commitment to it, and they called it Living with Dignity. And so they were able to, you know, they were super excited. We were able to get ramps in. In fact, interestingly, we bought some temporary or metal ramps off Craigslist and were able to put them in people's homes that needed them. So the goal is we're going to move on from here. So just now as we're reopening, we're hopefully reopening with all of the surge, we don't know exactly. And that kind of being the thing that's playing.
That sounds amazing. And again, I don't know how you do it all.
Well, again, it was a team. It was an accident that I got involved in that. One of the CODAs I had worked with previously had done some private business home mods, home design. She'd done a course on design and interior decorating. And she said, I'm really not interested in this. I don't have the skill base for some of this, but I think you should be involved. And it was a team that put it together. But I think that's something that other OTs could be very actively involved in that community, starting to look at, are there caregiver agencies in your community that service just mainly the Medicare, Medicaid dual eligible clients or Medicaid eligible clients? And how can you then work with that agency to look at pulling in volunteers? I mean, we had Rotary clubs that came in and did stuff. We were able to get plumbing, local plumbers that came in and repaired leaking sinks and leaking toilets for us free of charge. We were able, I remember one client, the floor was rotted in the bathroom, and we had a couple of contractors that came in, and they did the work free with their guys on the weekend. They all volunteered. We just had to raise the money for the supplies.
Wow, that's amazing. Is there going to be a write-up or any information on this program that we could share with other people? Or
I'll see if I can find a couple of news articles about it that we put out last year.
Okay, because yeah, how awesome would it be to get more of these? Living with Dignity, is that what it was called?
That's what they called it, yeah.
Yeah, in other communities.
It would be great for OTs to be able to spearhead this as an OT program, you know.
Right. Across.
And it kind of was very similar to the CAPABLE program in some ways, you know, that 2 to 6 visits from an OT, the handyman, and then the nurse. Well, they already had the nurse delegation. They had the caregivers in there because that was part of that program. But yeah, it was exciting to see the differences and just to hear people's stories about what a difference we had made and how they could live or what they could do or take care of their loved one.
Right. Yeah, no, that's huge. And I think like towns with universities, with like OT, PT schools and so forth. And like, I was just thinking, we were talking about like our tech school, you know, we have the plumbing and construction and things like that. Why can't all of they come together and every year do so many or something?
Awesome. That would be great. And then, you know, you could use the Home for Life design app for the school piece that way and, you know, get your reports. That's what I did with those reports, taking the pictures, you know, and sometimes it was just simple repairs. Other times it was replacing the flooring because the carpet was now stretched or bare and it was a trip hazard, simple ramps. But sometimes, you know, a little bit more complicated bathroom modifications. But sometimes just simple DME as well, when you look at that.
Hey, Chuck, Wave, you're live on our podcast.
Hi, y'all.
Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the home safety and modification course that you are, you know, the big trainer in and helping a lot of people with. So tell us all about it.
Okay, so I think, again, it comes back to this information we've been talking about, defining, you know, we set it up to look at predominantly helping you understand billing Med Part B, what that looked like, what services would fit into that medically necessary component. And then being able to give you time efficient and cost effective ways of doing that whole process so that you could not only provide a quality service, but also still get reasonably paid for it, which is important. And so the course includes pulling in Anthony Maritato with his Medicare Part B and helping you understand all of that. It includes you doing things on marketing and setting up Facebook pages and looking at how to build a practice. It then pulls in EMR and how to document. And we talk about some of doing your own billing. Tony does that. And then HelloNote helps you with some of that as well. So that you can understand and do that. And then we have been using the Home for Life app as part of it, which is an app that allows you to go out and put reports together fairly quickly with a consistent quality product. But also while you're working with the client, you can discuss some of the modifications and take pictures. We have a new surprise piece that we're adding to that with Magic Plan with an in-service and discussion coming up on that soon so that you can draw out the plans really quickly while you're there if you're looking at major modifications. And, you know, I'm just kind of working you through that process of how do you do this? What do you have to have in place before your first visit? What do you do on your first visit? What does that look like? How are you going to bill some of this? And you need to use, you know, again, your clinical decision-making and judgment. But we give you some guidelines and some recommendations on how that's being done. What to do after your first visit? How many more visits? What does that look like? Those are kind of all the pieces we've been putting together.
Yeah, and I also think you underestimate or don't talk enough about just your knowledge and your availability for questions and answers and support and guidance because, again, You've seen all ages. You do private, you do Medicare, you do free, and know all different funding sources. So just your wealth of knowledge has made that program so wonderful and allowing therapists to learn all the different areas instead of focused on kind of one thing. So
We did do a whole session on how to get your mods funded for your client, which is really interesting right now. I'm still working this in this COVID environment. We've delayed a few things, but I'm still working with a union group who are getting together as volunteers to build a ramp for a particular client who has no alternative funding sources. Looking at some of the, you know, just like we talked about with the Living with Dignity program, can I refer a client to that if that's what they need? What are the resources available through Medicaid for some of those options?
That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about before we're done. Just in general, what tips do you have for someone that is wanting to start a business and or maybe wanting to start a home safety and modification business or just in general, whatever you feel you want to provide, what tips or wisdom do you have to share with everyone?
So I think I would have been much more successful earlier on if I had found your group earlier.
Well, thank you. And I did not pay her to say that, just so you guys all know.
No, she's not paying me to say that. No, but I'm thinking that understanding and getting a group together, people who've done it or who are at least trying in that same area so you can learn from each other's experience is really, really, really helpful. I did join another group that does home modifications, but people were struggling as much to try and set up businesses, weren't understanding the Medicare process. But seeing people who successfully are doing businesses that are encouraging you, being part of that is really helpful. I think I did use a SCORE mentor for part of it at the beginning, and that was helpful as well, but not as helpful as the Next Level group has been because it's so directed to occupational therapy, setting up businesses, and some of those unique things that we encounter. But that did help. I think knowing that it's going to take time, right? But then also being prepared for, I went from not busy to really busy almost within a few weeks period, right? And so making sure that you spend that time getting processes in place, but you don't understand that until you're either talking to someone who's really experienced and has been through it, or until it's all of a sudden on you and you're so busy with, you know, well, oh, I needed to have a policies and procedures manual, you know, while I'm contracting with Area Agency on Aging and DDA, they're asking me, what are my policies and procedures about A, B, and C? And I'm going, oh. For me, thankfully, I had, you know, being a manager in not only at university free clinics and at the free clinic here, but also in rehab centers and things like that. So, you know, writing policies and procedures wasn't a foreign thing for me, but I think the realization that even though it's just me here, I really needed them. So knowing that piece and the fact that you have those available, you know, again, they need to be modified to your unique situation, but having the structures and stuff in place, I think that is a really helpful piece. And you kind of look at what time and money equation looks like for you as you're trying to set that up. One of the things I want to say is Medicare is not as intimidating as it sounds. It is really very quickly can become very easy to do, and you get paid within 10 to 14 days, which, you know, I'm still waiting for a workers' comp payment for 3 months ago, and they referred me the client, and they're still telling me I'm not on their preferred client list and they're not paying. So finally I contacted the client and she gave me her case manager's name and I had to send everything to them. Medicare is way easier. I'm just going to put that out there. Way easier to understand the benefits that a client has. So not to be intimidated by that, but to think about, if I just learn these simple steps, then I'm going to be able to do that much easier.
Awesome. I think those are all wonderful tips and similar things that I have encountered over the years. I have a question. Do you have any certifications? Because I see there's, or I know there's lots of different certifications out there for home mods. Like there's the CAPS, there's the CLIP, there's the, I'm going to put the Southern California one.
The ECHM.
Yeah.
Executive certificate.
Yeah. Do you have those? How do those compare? Do people need them? Do they not?
So I'm going to say with these, it's all really going to depend on your market and on your knowledge level and background. So I have some familiarity with building and construction. I built my first home back in 1983, building a lot of it myself and living in the frame of it with a new baby on the way and fighting off the chicken hawks, another whole story. In Australia, so, you know, I had some familiarity with building. So that was helpful. There are what, like in my state, the L&I industry runs a couple of just general building construction awareness courses. And so I found that really helpful. They did a course that was, this was a course that I did for L&I, and it's called Contractors Toolbox. And it really, to me, that was helpful because it looked at the contractor's perspective, but it had a choice of options for things like creating contracts, everything you needed to know about L&I, But it also did things like hiring an independent contractor, looking at some of the codes and licensing, accident prevention and marketing strategies and things like that. That was useful because it got me familiar with the remodeling, contracting community in my state. And not only that, but also put me in some of their faces as well with how to work together. So that was a helpful one. I did do the CAPS, and it does give you some credibility with the builders. But if you're looking for knowledge, it really wasn't one that's going to give you those knowledge and resources about what to do. And I'm really finding I'm still learning on different types of modifications, but I'm also still learning in terms of some of the complex DME, because I did not know about rolling, sliding, tub transfer benches until I was assessing this client who was falling out of one. And suddenly then went and did my homework on all of the options that's available. And so being able to sometimes recommend that instead of a total bathroom remodel has been really helpful. But they're also really expensive, but we're getting them covered by Medicaid. So, $5,000 or $7,000 worth of that. So nothing beats looking at some of the DME companies, working with them to understand what's available aside from their normal pieces. Again, if you're looking at certifications, I just did the CHAMPS one with the David Corey Company for workers' compensation. And I found it was really helpful to help me understand the workers' compensation market, who I'm dealing with, how it works and what they're looking for. Again, not a lot on the OT side of how to remodel and do that piece. AOTA has a guidelines book that they've put out, and that's really good because it looks at the evidence-based stuff. Do you have that one there? I'll just grab it from my...
I'm pretty sure I have it. I was just looking.
So I actually, here's AOTA guidelines on home modifications.
Right, yep.
So that looks at the evidence-based practice piece on that. So if you're wanting to educate yourself, I would look at that. The other one that I've got is productive aging, which has some stuff in there. And then this book has been interesting.
Yes, I have that one.
That I picked up. And it's written, of course, no bias here, because I think the main authors are Australian. But it is written in American English that you would understand, just to put that out there. But it has been helpful at times when I've had questions. But I've also taken a couple of courses in universal design. And at the university, I taught the ADA audits on the commercial buildings. And I'm surprised by a number of people that keep saying, and particularly builders, well, I'm just going to do the home to ADA design. And one of the things I say with clients and with the contractors, have you ever tried on the hospital socks of one size fits all? And how successful does that work for you? So firstly, legally, the ADA does not apply to your personal residence. And secondly, when we look at universal design and we look at ADA, if we're doing general aging in place recommendations, those are very useful tools and standards to start with. But when we're looking at for a client who has a disability, we need to be able to know how to alter those to fit specifically to that client, their impairments, and what the long-term prognosis for those impairments are. So that's kind of, getting that information and then just working with your local case managers, area agency on aging, and looking at what they're funding. Those pieces of information are much more valuable, I think, than some of the courses. I've heard good things about the executive certificate. If you're needing information as an occupational therapist, to develop some of those skills and to have a certain baseline of information and education, I think that's a really good course to look at. I know AOTA has made some comments about the CLIPS course. I have not met anyone who's done that I've been able to get a good discussion about what that includes on. So does that help answer that question?
Yeah, no, that does, because I see my book. There it is. I was worried I lost that book. Anyways, no, I just get a lot of questions on, you know, the CAPS, the CLIP, the EC, which I can't remember. And do we need those certifications or not? And how is that, you know, another question that I get is how is that different than the program that we have on home safety and modification, you know, building your business and so forth. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I think the thing is with the program that we're looking at you coming in with a certain skill set or looking at ways to develop that skill set. So those certificates, particularly like the ECMH or the executive certificate from USC, or the CLIPS potentially would give you some of the knowledge base that you're looking at, but also so would all of these other things that we're talking about. Unless you're doing a lot of work with builders or you're doing a lot of the more extensive remodels and working in more of that private pay market, I'm not so sure that the CAPS necessarily is useful, but it is something that's often recognized. And so that recognition piece. But our course is kind of more the nuts and bolts of running your business, doing the billing pieces. How do you put that together with that knowledge base so that you have a successful business related to that? Who do you market to? How do you do the billing? How do you decide if it's Medicare covered or not? Those pieces. What are the tools that allow you to do that in a cost-effective, time-effective manner?
Plus, you go into depth on, okay, before your first visit, you need to do this, this, and this. During your first visit, you need to do this, this, and this after your visit. And then you provide them all the tools they need in order to properly assess the home and so forth. So yeah, I just see that it's so much more than, you know, one of the certificate courses or whatever. So, but again, then they have question and answer sessions with you. And you have so much knowledge and experience, that really helps people out. So awesome. Well, is there obviously we could do a podcast, talk with you for hours and hours, cause you have so many vast areas that you have experience with. Is there any last minute things you would like to share with anyone about starting their business or with home safety and modifications?
I think that, and I know that Emily and Sheila just did a piece on this, but I think in this current environment, we now have the recognition of occupational therapy from Medicare for doing this. We now have the CDC guidelines that are strongly pushing an occupational therapy home safety evaluation. We now have an environment where a lot of clients are not wanting to be placed in nursing homes, assisted livings, et cetera. It's time for OT to really shine in this market. I mean, I think it's time to go out and conquer. It's right there waiting for us. It's an ideal environment in lots of ways for us to be setting up this kind of business.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've had calls of people bringing their loved ones home from assisted livings, bringing them home from nursing homes, doing everything possible to keep them going in from those settings. So it's actually kind of a good time to get into this type of business and help people be able to live at home and, you know, age with dignity. Awesome. Well, thank you, Sue. And thank you everyone for listening to the Next Level Occupational Therapy podcast. Please visit our Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook page or go check out our website. It is www.nextlevelot.com. lots of awesome information on there from tons of different healthcare professionals and OTs. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to today's show, which is sponsored by our Therapy Business Builder Program, where we help healthcare professionals start the business of their dreams from the ground up. Also, be sure to join our free Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook group. And for even more support, guidance, and training, check out our Next Level Visionary Membership group. Time to level up, occupational therapy professionals.